Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zended.
I am your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Garda Moje.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a group of friends who want to play an RPG, but you have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics, terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax.
Let us help you
improve your art of GMing.
One show at a time.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Seize the GM. So, guys, what
yes, Zen.
Have you been up to since the last time we sat down?
Oh, mostly writing stuff.
Wait, writing stuff? For what?
Trying to get the next novel idea out there.
Oh,
that's right. You have a published novel.
I do, but trying to get the next one ready.
Huh. So you finally finished the outlining phase, and you've gone into the writing phase.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
No.
Cool, so we know where that lies. It doesn't.
No, I'm right before the outlining phase.
Oh, you're in the brainstorming phase?
Right. What's that word?
Madman.
You know, it has something to do with what we're doing today. The world building phase, I think.
Oh, the world building phase.
Yeah, it might have something to do with something we're doing later today. I don't know.
Maybe. Okay.
I mean, that almost sounds like a handoff and a pitch to someone else in the pod.
It could be. And who do we happen to have with us today?
Hello, my name is Jeffrey W. Ingram, feeling snazzy.
Listen to him.
Snazzy is good. Snazzy is good.
Snazzy is good.
And I'm Mike.
Michael couldn't make it, unfortunately. We're from the World Builders Anthem.
Yes, they are.
So world building is passion of mine and a nemesis of mine at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like a Greek hero of world building, you know. It's my greatest strength and my greatest flaw at the same time.
As it should be, otherwise you just get carried away. And you know, the fun part is you've been on the pod before, but I wasn't able to be there. So this will be our first chance to kind of jibber-jabber and chat back and forth, and Zen may come to regret this.
No, not at all. That's part of the reason why we wanted to do this. See, so.
Yes, and Michael was actually supposed to be on. I got a desperate email from him at 7:30. I guess he had an insane day at a paying job. So I guess he takes that more seriously than podcasting. So.
That's a fool. I don't know anything about this paid gig thing.
Oh, I need money to pay for my household expenses.
Whatever.
It helps. You've got to pay for the gaming book some way, somehow.
Yes, you do.
I suppose so.
Or you just make it all up in your head. That's my second strategy.
There you go, see? So, Jeffrey, you do a world-building show every week.
Yes.
Why? Yes, Why?
Why?
Because, sounds like fun.
Yes, because, I mean, it's a never... Depending on the project you're working on, you know, you can go to extreme depth into any area, you know, to the micro level of a world, you know. So the thing is, you know, and I talked about this with my friend Jim Six, you know, world building is much like an iceberg, you know. So there's a little bit revealed, but beneath that there is a whole mess and stuff that, you know, might never become important or revealed to people on the outside, but it's the gears that make it work, that make it feel real. You know, so it's like, you can kind of go into any topic way too deep. And actually, I even criticize world building as deep as I get to it on the show as well. You know, because I think a lot of times people use world building as an excuse to not do the thing they want to with world building. You know, they go for this elusive fake thing called realistic work, fantasy world, or science fiction world, or any kind of fictional world. You know, I mean, the thing is, you're never going to find that. It's not, it's a false search.
Or when it's done.
Yeah, oh, done. No such thing. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like my baby Gargoyle. You know, I will continue to world build. You know, I mean, the problem is, you know, when you're trying to recreate 4 billion years, you're just never going to quite get done as one person. You know?
So there's a lot of details that really have to be kind of smoothed over there.
Yeah.
And
so, you know,
anybody listening at home who hasn't figured out why Jeffrey is on the show probably has figured it out by now, because we love the building of worlds as part of the GMing and how to get that world set up. And so we're going to definitely delve into a little of how they do what they do, but more importantly, what's coming up with it for them. Because we're excited for our friends at the pod, who are fantastically wonderful humans.
It's true.
And then there are these guys.
And then there's these guys. Yeah.
You guys gave me a full beat to fill. So
I was letting you go, man. I wanted to see where you were ready to take this, and you were ready to throw them literally under the bus. Not even figuratively, literally under the bus.
Better than under the train in Eberron.
No, because you can grab a hold of the bottom of that train. I mean, you'll be really, really crispy by the time you get to where you're going because of all the lightning, but hey, you can do it. I'm just saying.
Well, if you're under it, though, you'll be grounded so the lightning will just pass right through.
Oh, no, you don't. You're between the two. Because it conducts it right through the bottom of the, from the, like the stones in the ground, right through you into the train.
Yeah, but see, you're just looking more like a circuit.
It's still going to burn you up.
Yeah, just do the whole fire bending thing, you know? Just you know,
wrong game.
That don't test you. No, I know, I'm just going to kind of merge the two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, as the only person here who's been on the third rail of a train line several times.
Ooh.
Wait, that might actually explain the 280-some episodes of World Building.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could just be that.
But, yeah, you've done some really deep dives into everything from, like, how to work out cultures to map making, which, you know, we had Deanne on the show for that too.
Yes. Because
she is
person for that. Yeah.
Awesome with mapping. But I know you guys have been working on developing like almost like a course.
Yes. Yes. So essentially it's kind of where I've gotten to. And it's something that, I think if you go to howtoworldbuild.com/coming soon, I should have really looked it up before I came.
we'll put a link to it in our show notes.
And, essentially the idea is for what I've been working on, and I'm going to be releasing it soon. The question is it going to come before I finish up my novel? I think it will. We're getting ready actually at my company, which we need to release another big course right now. So, the idea is I've sort of been working on this idea of what I like to call framework world building. And the idea is, you know, it's sort of inspired by working in theater. And, you have these great sets sometimes where the audience can look and they have this believable version of what they're looking at. And so they can see depth and reality in something. But really, if you look at it from any other angle, you can tell it's really fake. It's not true. So the idea is you create these frames in your world, which are places where stories take place. and you flesh those out with a lot of detail, but then you have broad strokes painted in other areas that you might want to explore later or that you have ideas about, just so later on you can create patterns in your mind that you can sort of revisit those and add more detail if you need to later on. But that way you can cover a religion of a culture, but not necessarily go and create an entire pantheon, all of the rituals. You don't necessarily need that. Because a lot of times, whenever you're creating a game or you're creating a novel, there might be a few elements of a religion that comes out in fantasy, like a certain ritual. But, you know, why do you need to know the exact details on, you know, the manhood, you know, the ritual, the rite of passage? You don't necessarily need that, but if you understand how the culture exists and some of the ideas of the religion, later on when you need to, you can use those same ideas to flesh out something that fits in with that culture. So with the ultimate understanding, and I like the idea of things being, I like to call it naturalistic, which I don't think is a real word, but the idea is, it kind of feels real on a smell test, but if you push it, it's just going to fall over. If you push it, it's going to fall over because it's vacuous. But and not really. It's, the idea is you can go deeper when you create patterns.
You've got enough touchstones and enough points to tie back to. You can always go a step deeper and kind of make it fit. And if you're looking at it from the audience side, all those touchstones become kind of a actual painting. You don't have the pointillism of Monet and the Impressionists where every little dot is made, but what you've got is enough that the eyes are drawn to the bigger picture that you can fill in as needed.
Exactly. That's right. Because, you know, I say the ultimate loss with Tolkien is he has this greatly detailed world and hardly any stories to fill it. You know, so it's like you can spend 40 years creating a really detailed world. And you know what? His world still wasn't finished. And like I said, there's no way, you know, there's, you know, what the Earth is, what they say, it's like right now the estimate is like 14 billion years old. You know, there's been, you know, I'm throwing out a bogus number there, but I think there's been 20 billion people who've lived since the dawn of time that sort of got the Earth to where it is. And ultimately, if you could somehow recreate that, you're still going to have the jerk on Reddit, you know, just sit there and go, oh, you made that character act out of character. You made, you know, your magic system isn't realistic, which is my favorite insult, actually. Really?
Your magic doesn't follow us. Okay,
but picking the lock that way was too much. It was too much.
Your magic does not follow enough rules of physics.
Exactly. You know, so it's like, I kind of like to draw from inspirations of physical science and stuff like that, because I'm just a really geeky person, and I watch break courses. That's what I stream at. So I watch stuff on physics. I watch stuff a lot on history, because culture is sort of my biggest geek thing. You know, where I kind of geek out is, you know, why do people who live here do things differently than people who live here? You know, why do we speak different? You know, how come out of all of the different languages that we've created, no one's got one right?
No one's gotten the language right?
Partially because English keeps rifling through their pockets for spare participles, but, you know.
Yeah. You know, it's like this idea of standard American English is really, I love language, but I don't believe it. And the idea of a standard language is a really bad idea. You have to let things continue to grow and be organic. That's the way humans are. We're just fickle, and the more we play with languages, the more screwed up they become over time. But I think this is
the inherent fluidity of language is something that gets missed if people who try to lock it down. It is an abstract concept in and of itself, and so as we conceptualize of things differently, then the way in which we express them verbally has to change.
Exactly.
What we understand of the world around us is reflected in the language, and that goes back to, again, a big arguments of also how we see ourselves and how we define humanity, and, you know, Harold Bloom's argument about William Shakespeare basically defining what it means to be human in the modern age. Whole other podcast.
Yes, it is.
Relevant to world
building. A series of podcasts.
What?
series of doctoral dissertations.
Yes.
The great thing about world building as a basis is world building gets to storytelling, you know, and a lot of people forget character creation is world building. And to me, it's the fundamentally most important part of world building. Whenever you're going to interact it with someone else, you know, it's really the characters that people end up latching onto and learning about your world through. As you know, so you get into characters, you get into, sometimes you talk about, game systems, especially GURPS, because I'm that sad person, the only one who plays GURPS obsessively, which isn't quite true, but close.
I mean, considering how often I like to extol the virtues of the hero system, I think we may sometimes, we may have more overlap than difference here.
You know what? This is the thing that I love about GURPS. And they're actually, like, I've never actually gotten a chance to play GURPS.
The things falling on other things table?
No. What I love about GURPS is if you're like, I want to run this, I'm just going to throw, like, three things out because you can do this with GURPS. Mm-hmm. So it's Aztec, cyber technology, and magic. Okay.
Yeah, most stuff.
You can grab those three source books and make a game out of it because they've already done, like, they have so many splat books for just random things.
You should see the bookshelf behind me and all the groups.
And they're great. A lot of those books are some of the most interesting books to go through. You may never use a single thing out of it, but my God, they are full of ideas.
I remember one time I went through the GURPS space book, the third edition book, and I actually developed my entire solar system.
Because
it's a fantasy campaign without any space travel, but you know, it's like it needed to happen a lot of times. So, you know, and they had the math and the best science of the time, which now is actually debunked, but, you know.
But it still works. Like, if you still want to use it, you can still use it.
You should, because most people, if you put a solar system in a different way, I think it's believable because our experience is this one.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. It's the same way, like, if you see the literal translation of someone other's language into yours, you think they're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't do it that way. But the simple fact is, neither one of you are doing it wrong. You're just doing it the way you're doing it. Because you learned it largely before you figured out your language was stupid. I don't know. I'm on a language this time. I don't know.
No, but I mean that is a thing, and it's not that it either one of you are wrong. It's just that's how you learned how to do it. And like I said, like GURPS is great for just if you need a bunch of ideas, and you can find those books. You can usually, and I'm going to say this, and it sounds horrible, but look at any used bookstore. You will find somebody that is getting rid of GURPS books. And they're usually cheap.
Well, the thing I like about that was really, as a person that, you know, like our dual, I've been working on and off. You know, I like world building. I like to do different worlds and different settings and stuff like that. I've actually created different settings in Gardul and run different style campaigns. And GURPS lends to that, which I like.
Yeah.
I've done a Western with Magic campaign. I've done a space campaign. My Western, why don't people love Western more? I don't know why. Such a great setting. I don't know why.
I feel like a lot of people love Western in general. And I'm not. I'm very much not on the Western bandwagon, so to speak. And so it's, I feel like it's oversaturated at this point, honestly.
Well, I kind of like it when it's shown up in other things. Because the whole Western frontier thing of civilization into a wild area thing, whether it be the actual Western or space.
The theme of it, you mean.
The whole theme bit of entering
of
that
exploration.
Unexplored world with civilization at your back, but not necessarily carried with you.
Yeah, I love that theme. I just am not a fan of the Wild West setting, which may be also why you haven't seen card catalogs about things like Deadlands.
Where's my boot hill?
Yeah. Let's say I'm more likely to go on the Victorian side if we're going to go to that time period.
Oh, no. I'm anti-Victorian. So, that's the difference. You're either a Victorian or you're a Western. And here's the thing I found with Western, right? A lot of people verbalize it like in Western. And so it's like, I bought Boot Hill years ago, and I think I got people to play with me one time. And it was my cousins at their house. Everyone else was like, oh yeah, let's do that, that's awesome, and then let's just play D&D. you know, and that in Gamma World, which never got me love, as a system, which hurt me, because I love Gamma World. But specifically, and then like later on, I developed a Western setting in my world. You know, where the themes kind of worked, it felt similar because it was in a drier area. You know, and there were spots that weren't dry, so I could kind of go a little bit more weird with it, but, because it was sort of more in an African style, like a Southern African style, ecosystem. You know, you would have a lot of very dry stuff, so you can kind of get into, like feeling wise, it could feel very similar to like the, certain parts of the Western America, well, what I think most of us think of it as. And I spent a lot of time developing it, and my people show up and they love the game, and then they say, oh, we have other things we have to do. And then, oh, here's the funny thing, is that I've ran more special ops games. You know, which I would think would be much more marginal in appeal. Than I have Western games. So people, They vocalize that they like, but there's some, it's never good enough to play in them, you know.
It's an interesting thing to watch, and part of it may be, you know, a confirmation bias of who's around when we're talking about it. It's, I think the special ops style games, everybody likes to feel that empowered. And so you also see that bleeding over into games like Shadowrun, which all of us love for various and sundry reasons, which is kind of a similar setup anyway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having more of a background in movies, people will want to play Predator before they're going to want to play Last Man Standing.
Could be.
You know, there's something about certain things, you know, I think it's the appeal where people say they like lots of games, but then most people end up just buying the first-person shooters.
They have a style that they enjoy.
Well, not even just from a gaming standpoint, just from the idea of it's the feeling, the action poweredness, which is, I think a lot of gamers don't are looking for, like that type of empowerment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's...
I would definitely say the games in general do tend to be power fantasies, so yeah, that very much plays into it, and the kind of Black Ops narrative tends to be that you're fighting these mooks who are, you know, they're generally weaker than you or whatever, and you are this awesome hero character, so yeah, I can understand the appeal.
Even though one thing I learned very quickly when I was in the service, I was a cavalry scout, a 19 Delta for years, which is a combat arms reconnaissance job today. No horses included. And, but I learned very quickly when I got out that I had to really change my mindset for how I put together, and I called them engagements, you know, which probably should have been my first thing that I realized that, like, the first several games I ran when I got out, I just mass slaughtered characters. And I felt kind of bad, but I don't really like to kill characters, but if they die, they die. But it was like, and things I thought were like weak, easy engagements would just slot because, you know, when you don't have a bunch of soldiers playing your characters, you know, they don't react in ways that you expect, you know, so that's, I think the appeal is the mystery to something that is in a way too common in people's vocabularies, but, yeah, I don't know, but, yeah, you have to be careful. You can just waylay people. I don't know where that came from, so you're welcome.
Yeah, I have. I don't know. I basically pitched. So the AP that I'm running right now that's in the feed is we're about ready to wrap it up. We've got maybe two more sessions, and the whole thing will be done. And so I was like, well, we should do something. You know, we should talk about what we're going to do next. And I was like, you know, we could do like a Monster Hunter game, but I wanted to do something with Fate. And so they were like, oh, okay. And they immediately went like Victorian, like that's what they wanted. And I'm like, okay. Okay. I can do this. I have to do a lot more research than I wanted to, but I can do this and I can make it happen. And I had a couple of other.
Was this Victorian in feel or like actual Victorian period?
Like it's going to be set in London.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so actual real research.
I can get you some. I can get you lots of good research already on hand.
My head went somewhere else entirely when you said Monster Hunter, because I'm thinking the Monster Hunter games of the giant creatures that you're hunting in Victorian. What?
No. Oh, okay. This is like. So
we're victorious giants.
So basically what you have in Fate, you have, when you start basically building, you have issues. You have two issues. And they're like the underpinnings to the setting. And your two issues lay out what everything else builds on. And so we had the premise of one of those issues is monsters are real. And then the other one, because they kind of look like aspects in Fate, those issues do. So if they can be really broad, then you can really play with them and you can really kind of push the boundaries of what those things are and what they actually mean. And then the other one, like, we all were, like, involved in the second one. Because the first one's really easy. It's like, you know, monsters are real. That's, you know, pretty simple. But the second one was somebody was like, you know, the light fades. And somebody was like, I don't like Fade. It just sounds weird. And then, so we went back and forth. We were pitching different things. And somebody came up with, as the light fades, the darkness grows. And it's just broad enough where nobody felt like it was just like it's a doomed thing, because if they can hold the light where it's at or make it brighter, then the world isn't going to devolve into this darkness. And so the premise is that it's kind of that time frame. And what you've also got is the look of it is just before they want to set it at the back end of Queen Victoria's reign. So it's real. It's only like maybe 10 years or 12 years till World War I starts. So they got this.
A lot of pressures are really starting to.
Yeah. And so it was just like kind of this really cool, and I'm like, I can work with this. So we're going to make it's going to be a horror-themed Victorian monster hunter, political elements will be present. But the funny part is that I told him up front, I said, okay, but here's the deal. None of you guys can have, like, I don't want, like, super wealthy lords and everything else. You're like the every normal man in this.
Well, it's funny because just the second you talk about this very much reminds me of a TV series, Penny Dreadful.
Yes. Yes.
I believe that was actually Victorian era.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
I thought it was a very, very good show.
I just started watching it.
I watched like one season. I really liked the second season. I got distracted by something else.
They're doing a new series for it.
It's a great concept for a story. And I kind of like the Victorian era. See, I kind of lie when I say I don't like stuff because I usually do. because it's the idea, it's like where naturalism, you know, slash science is starting, you know, and to me that's sort of like a theme that you got to hit to when you get there. It's like science versus mysticism. And it's the line of, you know, and it's kind of what you said, you know, when the light shines on how we understand something, the mystery goes away, you know, and playing with that somehow, you know, I do think would be an interesting setting for sure.
Yeah. So we'll see how this ends up panning out.
You know, they should all be wealthy.
No, I, that was the whole point. Like, I don't want them to be. And so I'm not going to spoil too much because we didn't actually record that initial like pitching session where we, you know, kind of worked on stuff like that. But once we do like actual character building and the last of the world building portion where people are actually bringing stuff to the table, that's when like that stuff is going to be recorded. And I'm really kind of looking forward to being able to use some of that material and show people like what you can do with it. Because it doesn't have to be like super in depth. Like you can use everything that already exists around you and just throw a few things in to just make it crazy and hopefully a lot of fun.
Yeah, and if you ever do it in the noir setting, there was a great indie game I played at a con, Dial M for Monster. It was a very fun game. Our version ended up being very campy, but that's probably because I was playing. So it seems to go that way. I don't know why. Except for the Victorian setting, I mean, if you did one strictly noir, it sort of 50s B feel, you know, 40s or 50s kind of B stuff, it kind of has the feel to whether you take it serious or not would depend on the narration. But it's a very fun narrative system.
That's cool. That is very cool. Yeah. I've been toying around with a lot of these different ideas for doing games, and since I don't my normal weekly game, this has become my normal weekly game, the one that I record.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Yeah, same here. I understand.
If I recorded it, I might be able to have an excuse to actually do one weekly again.
Hey, you know what? That may be something that happens.
Yeah.
So we'll have to talk about that one, off air.
Mm-hmm. But, speaking of, we've talked about goals and plans, talked about looking at the larger kind of instruction set you've got for world building. And before we start, you know, transitioning to closing up, because if we don't start transitioning now, it'll probably be another 2 hours worth of random tangents we find.
Which reminds me.
If we go for another hour, then we can beat the previous episode's length.
It's true.
It went on for like an hour 40.
Was it that long?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I was still waiting to see if we were going to go through the two previous topics that took half an hour both times last time.
So far, we have been.
If I should listen to games, I don't remember what I talked about so I could avoid it here, but.
But it's okay. You guys haven't discussed clubbing yet. Or movies, yeah, too much. Those are the two big.
That was the Goth Night.
Yes.
Half an hour on it.
It was great. Seriously, if you haven't listened to that previous episode, listen to it after this one. They're both fun.
Episodes 23 and 26, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, it's 26. Michael actually finally showing up.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So in about three more episodes, we should have him on.
Yeah.
So if we keep the previous methods rolling. But we've talked a lot about kind of campaign building and a little bit of world building as an adjunct to kind of building out campaigns. But where is your favorite place to start when building a world for a game?
If I don't have a particular story in mind, but I know I want to run a game, I typically like to start very at the meta world level stuff and sit there and kind of figure out what are the types of themes that I want to get into, you know, in the story I want to tell. What type of stories do I want to tell?
Because, welcome, my top-down brother. Welcome.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I start there, and then sometimes when I get inspiration, I'll work really low down, and I like to, typically though, like, in my pure sense, I prefer to go top-down, but I'll iterate it, and I'll go, okay, I know I have this culture right here. Did they start there? I like to kind of think about their history and kind of then work backwards to sit there and go, what, you know, how did they get here? Did they have conflict with anyone else around? And so I can start to get a feeling of who likes who doesn't like who. So I have to get a feel for the world. But sometimes too, it's like I have a great character and I'm like, I gotta run a campaign around it. You gotta start there and work backwards. So, but in general, I'm more of a top-down, world builder. Because I kind of really like to focus on the story, because ultimately, if you don't have that kind of lens in place, you kind of need the story, and then you have to understand how you want the world to complement the story you want to tell. You know, or else you end up in rest.
Sorry. Yeah.
Alluding to off-recording conversation.
Maybe we've done something along those lines before.
Could be.
Yeah.
Well, one of our other favorite questions that we like to ask people who are kind enough to join us, what's your class and level?
I'm a 15th level half-orc assassin. Chaotic neutral. I'm actually probably more like neutral good, but I'm kind of hoping to get towards chaotic evil. I just can't do it.
Once you start down the light side, forever will it dominate your destiny.
Okay, Yoda.
Problem with grammar, have I yet?
Well, man, it's good to have you on. It's been a while. Like,
we should think of some time doing some sort of reciprocation thing. I mean, you guys back on our show too. You know, especially for published authors who want to talk about world building, the world builders and possibly some books. That might not be a bad idea.
It's true. Fun. We do have one of those on the show.
Sounds fun to me.
I don't write anything. I'm an idea person.
It's always good if you have a product, you know, to try and get on the shows to share it out, because, you know, maybe 1% of my people actually listen, you know. Who knows? This is the beautiful thing, as you guys know, podcasting. You really have no idea who's listening, if anyone. You know, maybe there's all these demos, but they've never actually hit play. I don't know.
Yeah.
Every now and then you get one of those emails of,
yes,
hey, I listened to this episode that's 4 years old, but it was amazing. Okay.
It's out there.
The funny thing is, with the world building, people feel the need to start episode one. And
you have a lot of episodes.
But yeah.
They're short for a while. It shouldn't take me too long to catch up.
That's true. Like, when I was doing 3 a week, which was insane. Never do that. But there were 15-minute episodes at that point.
Yeah.
That was way too much. Like, mentally, it just, my brain exploded doing that.
I do have to talk about the dumb days of podcasting with you.
I've got about a dozen podcasts I'm trying to catch up on anyway, so it'll be a slow build, but it'll happen.
That's why, you know, if people actually email me, which does happen occasionally, those always feel awesome. You know, and they're like, you know, it's like, don't start from the, just look for what you need help on and go there. take what you want and just throw the rest of it away. That's kind of part of the other reason for going in so deep on stuff is people are a lot of times looking for one angle here or there to flesh something out. And if you throw 30,000 ideas at them, one might stick. So.
It's okay. Don't get me started on designing the food culture of different races and species and settings.
Actually, I have an episode I don't know if I've actually done it yet. Building a culture from food.
Yeah, you did that once before.
Yeah.
It is one of my passions and loves.
Yeah, so. Because really, ultimately, the foods people eat are one of the big drivers to how they end up behaving. So the foods around them really do. I think it's a good way to build a culture is thinking, what foods do they eat? How do they get the food?
What food's available? What are they eating? It drives part of what they build as a culture, and then you ask the question of how are they consuming it, which then builds the society around what building blocks they had. I like using the examples of the evolution of Roman cuisine and from – anyway, okay. I'm going to stop now. I'm about to go off on one of those 30-minute tangents.
Yeah, he's good for those. He can do those all day long when you talk about food.
I have no idea. Long tangents, that's crazy.
And we talk about cocktails and the history of brewing processes. And, oh, look, we're talking about mythology and Shakespeare. And, oh, wait, how did we end up back here?
Let's talk about farming and how it was caused by the need for beer production.
It's very simple. People wanted their beer, which was best done by having grains, so they decided instead of trying to find the grains, they would just make the grains right there.
Wait, I have this great idea. We can grow the grain right next to the brewery.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
Employee of the month there.
You are now the god king of all Egypt. Yay!
Yep. Well...
On that note, God King of all Egypt, Pharaoh, Lord of all your domain, Jeffrey, thank you very much for coming on and talking with us and talking about world building and what you've got going at the World Builders Anvil, which links are in the doodly-doo. You should go check it out.
Yes.
But as is our tradition here, we also have, you know, usually a kind of recommendation in our closing remarks, things for listeners to take away and take with them. And so, Zen, what are you going to recommend?
Actually, Penny Dreadful, because I have been, I just started watching it because I need it for the, for that fate game that I'm getting ready to run. So I was like, I need to make sure that I have a better grasp on, some of the creepier elements that I'm going to be using. So I've got that and a couple of other things in my queue, but that's the one that I've been recently devouring the like crazy. So,
Falkenstein.
Yeah, that's a game that I'd have to read.
Yes, or you can take the shortcut by.
That's true. I'm
going to seizethegm.com card catalog posts about Castle Falkenstein.
That's true. We did do well. You did do those. So, yeah. What do you got?
Referential plugs are what you, that's what you got me here for.
I know. Okay, so, no, what do you got?
I've been doing nothing but watching E3 trailers. Pretty much the video games, they're great stories. Looking forward to that. So many of them. From just these little small topic games Nintendo's throwing out to all of the phone games. All of them.
All of the phone games.
So every game you've ever think of also has a phone game. There's a Commander Keen phone game. Okay, so for people who don't know the Commander Keen, we're talking about early id Software stuff from like pre-Wolfenstein, pre-Doom stuff.
Yeah.
And they're bringing it back as a phone game.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know why. I guess they own the IP and they need to use it.
Easy that could be it.
True. But yep. Lots of interesting looking games. Seriously, just Google on or just YouTube E3 trailer 2019. It's
Cyberpunk 2077.
See, I'm horrible. I still play like Subway Surf.
Subway. Well.
Yeah. I don't play big games on my phone. So. I have Ingress on my phone again, but that's about it.
See, I actually have one game I'm looking forward to that started as a phone game that looks like it's going to become a bigger game, which is Final Fantasy Brave Exvius.
Oh, cool.
It's one of the games where Square decided to go to the mining of nostalgia and dig out all the characters that you've ever loved and put them out and then make you pay microtransactions for them. But now they're going to make a full game out of the setting, and I'm actually really looking forward to it because despite the nostalgia mine, they actually made a really interesting world and magic system and how it works with pulling legendary warriors from mythology and bringing these visions to life as characters that you can fight with.
Cool.
A very convenient way to microtransaction you to death.
Right. I mean, if you're going to do it that way.
Of course. And that's why there's so many phone games.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So, Garde Manger, what have you got?
As is not uncommon, I'm going a little against type and breaking out of the mold here, partially from what I've been doing and partially because we need the reminder, get some exercise if you can. We all probably need to move a little bit more. So this week, and for us recording, it's kind of the start of summer, not unbearably, blazingly hot outside. So if you're able, get outside or get to a gym and move your body a little bit and get some exercise so that you can keep doing this gaming for a lot longer.
Because you love doing that.
Yeah.
And yeah. If you follow his Instagram, then you can see what he's talking about.
Maybe. They'll find it eventually.
They'll find it eventually. So, do you have anything, Jeffrey? You want
to? Sure, I'll throw one out there. Just sort of, it came to me. There's so many things you can actually recommend. The one that kind of came to mind is the Man in the High Castle.
Mm-hmm.
One, I'm just a huge fan of Philip K. Dick. You should actually read all of his books. But to go sort of counter to what was just said about exercise, just read all the books, watch the TV show. But the idea is, especially like as a game master or a storyteller, if you struggle on wargaming, possible moves, of things in your world, I think The Man from High Castle really did a very good job of doing that specific thing of taking an idea of something that we know and kind of wargaming out possibilities. And, I think it's one of the biggest strengths for world building, and for storytelling is just being able to, take time to say this, if this is the scenario, what are the possible conclusions? And, if you're in charge of the narrative, you can choose. Okay, this is what happened. It's a little more complicated with your players because they will always take that left down the wrong path. But, it's for a short story, for a video game, you can sort of force people's hands and take fate out.
Cool.
And remarkably, I don't think we've used that before. I think that is a completely fresh listing, and it's a great show and a great story as well. And so I think that's a really smart one to toss in there.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So, all right, guys. Well, until next time, where we will dive back into some other fun element of GMing. Have fun and get out there and roll some dice.
Roll some dice.
Take care.
You can contact us or the show using Twitter, Facebook, or plain old email. Our Twitter accounts are @Zendead,
@JulesPodcaster,
and @2050GardeMoget.
And the show's Twitter account is @SeizeTheGM.
You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/SeizeTheGM. Or chat with us and other RPG lovers in our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com. And if you have a few bills you want to send us, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/SeizeTheGM podcast. And we thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you all again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike 4.0 international license. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by their respective owners. No infringement intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off the album Ghost Machine by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.